Jobless claims rose last week. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. 719,000 Americans filed for initial unemployment in the week ending March 27th. That is a large number. It's also an increase of 61,000 from the week before. It's not what one would prefer to see, but if we zoom out, the four-week moving average is down 10,000. It's at its lowest level since March of 2020. Speaking of jobs, President Biden's infrastructure plan aims to create them. It would spend about $2 trillion over 8 years and likely raise corporate taxes for 15 years to pay for it. Our next guest argues that when we think about infrastructure and infrastructure jobs, we should be thinking in generational terms. Joseph Kane is a senior research associate at Brookings and joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
So you've written about the need not just for infrastructure jobs, but to think about this as creating a talent pipeline. Why do you say that? What do you mean by a talent pipeline in infrastructure?
So when we often talk about infrastructure, we talk about its potential to stimulate economic activity. We think about construction projects. We think of those short-term opportunities that might be available when we improve our roads, our bridges, our water systems, our energy systems. But the larger opportunity here is more in terms of operation and maintenance. These are generational investments in many different types of physical systems all across the country.
In terms of pay and quality, are infrastructure-related jobs, the ones that you're talking about, I mean, where do they fall on the spectrum of job quality and income?
They not only can pay more on average, but what I like to stress is that they can pay more for entry-level workers or workers who are looking to transition into these positions. So those workers who are just at the beginning rungs of their career ladder. What's also crucial to emphasize here is the educational barriers to entry, that only about a half, 53.4% of infrastructure workers have a high school diploma or less, compared to around a third of all workers nationally. So those formal educational barriers to entry are also lower in this case. And there are many, many replacement needs in these positions too, that up to a quarter of this workforce will need to be replaced over the next decade.
Joseph Kane is a senior research associate and associate fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at the Brookings Institution. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Some business executives, including prominent Black business leaders, are speaking out against Georgia's new voting law, arguing it'll disproportionately hurt voters of color. The law adds new identification requirements for absentee voting, limits the number of ballot drop boxes, and makes it illegal to offer food or water to voters waiting in line. Marketplace's Jasmine Garst reports.
Among those speaking up against the legislation are Ken Chenault, who is one of the first Black chief executives at a Fortune 500 company, and Merck's CEO Ken Frazier. A number of companies have now voiced their opposition to the legislation, including Coca-Cola and Delta, which are both headquartered in Atlanta, calling it, quote, unacceptable. Porsche, UPS, Mercedes-Benz, and Viacom CBS have also issued statements. The new Georgia law comes after historic Black turnout in recent elections. It's part of a wave of Republican-backed voter restrictions proposed across the country. Former President Donald Trump falsely claimed that last year's election defeat was due to fraud. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
We're nearing the end of the men's and women's college basketball tournament, March Madness. It is the NCAA's most profitable event, and yet the college athletes in the tournament don't get paid. They're classified as amateurs. The Supreme Court yesterday heard arguments about whether that is legal. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more.
The Supreme Court is considering whether the NCAA's amateurism rules, those that prohibit student athletes from getting paid, are lawful. Right now, students can't be paid, and the scholarship money that they get can only be as much as it costs to go to that school. Michael Carrier teaches antitrust law at Rutgers. He says at the center of this case is an issue of fairness.
We're in the middle of March Madness. We're in the middle of a basketball tournament in which there are literally billions of dollars at stake. And the question is, should the student athletes be entitled to a small piece of that?
After some states passed laws allowing students to take endorsement money, the NCAA recently said it would allow players to make some cash from the use of their name, image, and likeness. And there are currently multiple bills in Congress that would create federal rules for student-athlete compensation. Matt Mitten, executive director of the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University, says that's got to happen soon.
You can't have student-athletes in California being able to get a certain amount, and ones in New York, Ohio, Texas, different ones. It's just not workable.
The NCAA has long argued that schools paying student athletes will compromise the focus on education and will also tilt the competitive balance toward those colleges with the deepest pockets. But Ellen Zavian, a sports attorney in Washington, D.C., says the NCAA now has a tougher time making the argument that they're prioritizing the student athletes' best interest after the pandemic.
I really believe the NCAA pushing the envelope for student athletes to play in games, it sort of put the business ahead of the safety of the athlete.
The Supreme Court ruling is expected in late June. But Liz Mullen at the Sports Business Journal says whatever the court decides, the overall issue of student athlete payment is coming to a head.
Nobody really knows how this is going to come down, but everyone agrees there's going to be a big change.
And for some student athletes, including those participating in this weekend's Final Four, some who have been using the hashtag not NCAA property, that change is a long time coming. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.